And now the game where we ask people who usually think about big issues to come on and think about little tiny ones. In 1999, New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd won the Pulitzer Prize for her columns on the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Her specialty is examining how the personality flaws of politicians shape their public actions. And ever since, politicians have been doing their best to give her more and more material. Maureen Dowd, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thanks, Peter.
I went back and I reread those Pulitzer Prize-winning columns back from 98 and 99. You, among other things, were really seemingly angry at Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton at that time for what you felt that they had done and what they were trying to get away with. Do you ever look back at those columns and see if they hold up by your own lights?
No, I try to save emotions like anger for boyfriends.
Oh, I see.
No, I don't. I think of, you know, when I critique politicians for abuse of power or whatever, it's more, I do it in a more reasoned way.
You do say, you have said, and probably will continue to say, some pretty harsh things about the politicians you write about, their personality flaws. Does this ever cause you a problem? Have you ever offended somebody so much that it became a problem in your future relationship with them?
Well, there was that time when Monica Lewinsky kind of confronted me in this Indian restaurant that's next door to the New York Times.
Yeah.
And, you know, the piano player was playing Sid and the Clowns, and suddenly I saw her bearing down on me.
No, you are making that up.
And I realized there was no way I could take her. She was a very tall, imposing girl. And she came right up and said, you know, why are you writing about me? I didn't know how to explain. She was in the middle.
Okay,
of the biggest...
let's start at the beginning.
All right.
Yeah.
This is going to take a while to explain.
Well, did you talk to her? Did you explain yourself? Did you engage with her?
You know, it was like the Cowardly Lion, like I'm tough in print.
Oh, yeah.
My whole career, I thought maybe somebody would come up and throw a drink at me, like in Appointment in Samara. But she didn't throw a drink at me. I said to her that actually I was trying to defend her, because it was actually the Clintons who were trying to demonize her as a troubled girl who was stalking the president. And that hadn't seemed to occur to her, so...
Yeah, a lot of things didn't occur to her, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of, I'm sorry.
To be fair, a lot of things didn't occur to him either.
Yeah, that's
true.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you this specifically. You have written about sex scandals. I mean, I wonder if you have any particular insight that the rest of us don't into, shall we say, I don't know if you heard about this, Governor Spitzer's problems.
Oh, Lord, Peter.
No, I mean, in the sense that you've covered so intently these politicians and their psyches. I mean, people associate this with men because it's men who do it, but... Is that because it's a male behavior, or is it because it just happens to be that men are in the position of power? Do you think once we have women routinely in positions of power, we'll start seeing female-centered sex scandals?
Well, when you think about Elizabeth I, as played by Bette Davis, you know, she was always kind of mixing up sex and politics and sending off her lovers to the tower.
I like to think of Gwyneth Paltrow when I... No, I'm sorry. I like to think of Kate Blanchett when I think of Elizabeth I and sex.
Weren't
but that's
those
just me.
Movies?
Yeah, but I think it actually happened in real life.
Oh, okay.
And, well, in real life, Catherine the Great, she was very sexually rapacious, and certainly Cleopatra combined sex and power better than anyone.
It's hard to believe it never happened with Margaret Thatcher.
Well, you know, I do know for a fact that Ronald Reagan had a little sneaker about Margaret Thatcher. He thought she was very attractive, because one of his national security guys told me that he told him that.
Wait a minute.
I think
Ronald Reagan was a handsome single guy in Hollywood in the 40s, and he thought Margaret Thatcher was good looking?
No, later, when they were, you know, Margaret Thatcher was very kind of flirtatious with Reagan summits, and, you know, he felt very protective.
I have to tell you, everybody in this theater has their head between their knees right now trying to catch their breath. It was just something like... Okay, wait a minute.
But looking, I bet it looks good.
All right, that's exciting.
You know, if Thatcher and Reagan had bread, you Democrats would be really frightened.
It's alive!
Exactly.
I just want to ask you one last thing before we play the game. You got a delightful letter this week in response to one of your columns. You had compared George Bush, our president, in making a speech in which you say he was avoiding all kinds of responsibility and just sort of tap dancing around. You compared him to Gene Kelly, if I remember.
Yes, no, it wasn't a speech. It was when he was actually tap dancing in front of the White House.
Oh, excuse me. I forget.
He was waiting for John McCain, and he did this kind of soft shoe. And then he went to the gridiron and sang a cowboy ditty. And everyone was a little bit kind of flummoxed because the dollar's crashing and the Dow's crashing and we're going into a recession or depression. And Bush just seems to get happier and happier. So I said he has, you know, and everyone's trying to figure out, you know, what it's like the line in Harry Met Sally. What's he having? I want some of that.
Exactly.
So I just said he had become Gene Kelly, and Gene Kelly's wife, Patricia Kelly, wrote a charming letter to the editor where she said, you know, she knew Gene Kelly and the president was no Gene Kelly.
Well, nonetheless, Maureen Dowd, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
If you're the guy who thought up communication satellites, I want to know why I still can't get the game show channel.
This week, the world lost Arthur C. Clarke, visionary author of the book and film 2001, A Space Odyssey, as well as many other books, and he was a man who was able to describe the future before it got here. We're going to ask you three questions about the late Mr. Clarke. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Maureen Dowd playing for?
Maureen is playing for Elisheva Blass of New Haven, Connecticut.
Ready to play?
Yes.
Here we go. First question, here we go. Mr. Clarke's most famous achievement was writing the novel, 2001, co-writing the screenplay for the great movie that Stanley Kubrick made from it. Being involved, though, with that movie brought Clarke fame as well as some problems, such as which of these? A... Whenever he made a public appearance afterwards, he was always serenaded with the music Thus Sprach Zarathustra, the theme from the movie, which he absolutely hated. B, once when visiting the United States, he said that the immigration officer told him, I'm not letting you in unless you explain the ending of that movie. Or C, IBM, noting that the homicidal computer in the movie is named HAL, that's one further down the alphabet than IBM, H-A-L, they sued him for defamation.
Wow. Am I allowed to ask PJ for help?
Oh, yeah, good luck.
I am the perennial loser at this.
God, they all sound good. All right, let's say B.
You're going to go for B, the immigration officer?
Yeah.
You're right.
Wow.
All right.
You're right. The immigration officer said, I'm not letting you in unless you explain the meaning of the movie. By the way, Mr. Clarke always said the meaning of the movie is really simple. Humans evolve from apes to astronauts to a star child. There.
There you go.
What's the big deal? Next question. Mr. Clarke is credited for popularizing the idea of geosynchronous communication satellites way back in the 40s. These days, they're up there, you know, shooting radio shows, among other things, to your home. Later in life, he had another visionary technological idea that he really believed would someday revolutionize the world. What was that idea? A, elevators that would go all the way to outer space. B, vast orbital mirrors that could warm the planet, increasing arable land and ending the miseries of winter. Or C, delivering mail around the planet in a matter of hours by robot rocket ships.
Okay, B?
You're going to go for B, vast orbital mirrors that could warm our planet, because that would be a good idea?
Yeah. No, that's not... Oh, wait, maybe it's not B. Okay, what was C again?
I don't know.
C was...
I'm for that, you know, but...
C, he envisioned robot rockets that could deliver a piece of mail in 2 or 3 hours, all it would take to get it halfway around the world.
C?
You're going to go for delivering mail around the planet? That's your choice?
No. A.
A. You're going to go for A. We've eliminated the others. You're going to go for A, elevators into orbit?
That doesn't sound likely, does it?
Oh, you got to choose, Maureen.
Okay, B.
B. You're going to go for B. The orbital mirrors. No, it was A. It was the elevators.
No,
elevators
I
to orbit.
It.
Turns out... I think in order to credibly claim that you knew it, you have to do better than picking it third out of three. But no, your choice was B. The elevators, you see, it turns out that if you were able to get an elevator all the way up there, it would stand up because the top of the elevator would actually be in orbit around the Earth, you see.
Oh,
it would be stable
gosh.
If you could just make something strong enough. All right. This is great. Last question. You get this right, you win it all.
Oh, gosh.
In addition to technology, Clarke was also a visionary when it came to human society. Sometimes. Sometimes he got it wrong. at least as far as we know so far. Which of these was a prediction he once made? Was it A, that by 2001 humans would have figured out how to grow babies with gills so we could live underwater? Or was it B, that by the 1960s we would be able to use apes and monkeys as personal servants? Or C, that war would be obsolete by the 21st century because every human being would have access to a nuclear weapon and the risk would be too great?
Okay, I'm going to go with C.
You're going to go with C. He predicted that everybody would have their own personal nuclear weapon, so therefore war would be obsolete.
I don't know, C.
You're going to go for C? That's your choice? Personal nuclear weapons? Color coordinated with your outfit?
Such a cool idea.
It is. Well, it's an idea he should have had, even if he didn't.
You're going to go for C?
Yeah.
I'm afraid it was B, apes and monkeys as personal servants.
No.
He said, this is back in the 1950s, he said, quote, with our present knowledge of animal psychology, we can certainly solve the servant problem with the help of the monkey kingdom, unquote.
Oh, my God.
He then went on to say, indicating perhaps that he might have been joking, that we'd have to then deal with the monkeys unionizing. Carl, how did Maureen Dowd do in our quiz?
Well, Maureen needed at least two correct answers to win for Elisheva Blast, but she had just one correct answer.
Oh.
Maureen. Oh, well, thank you so much. That was fun.
Maureen Dowd is a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the New York Times. Maureen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.